Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
NBA Finals Game 3 tonight in Indianapolis, a series that is knotted at a game apiece. And as we talked last hour with our good friend Steve Sands about Oakmont tomorrow, round one of the U.S. Open. Somebody who is into both of those things is our good friend Joe House from The Ringer, at House from D.C. on X, on Twitter. I'm just curious, between the two, what are you most looking forward to watching here over the next 2 days, tonight or tomorrow?
Man, that's a great question. I will say I'm equally excited for both. You know, the U.S. Open is a marathon, and Thursday is always such a great experience for all of the majors, where your eyes and your brain acclimate to what we get to watch over the next 4 days. But, you know, I'm anticipating some carnage. You just have to, like, get your head around what the next four days might portend. But this basketball game and the chess match between the two head coaches and the two superstars is also riveting stuff, Kev. So I'm equally excited.
Yeah, I think the thing about these majors, especially the ones in which you get a new course every year, and Oakmont is going to look new because of the, you know, cutting down of all the trees, is just getting acclimated to it, you know, and understanding what, you know, the front nine looks like. Because by the time you get to Saturday, you got a good feel for, like, all right, we know that 13 is this, and it's going to play this way, but I enjoy watching all of it. Let's start with the NBA. I have said, Joe, over the last few weeks, and definitely over the last week in particular, that I think this is the best defensive team that I've watched in a long, long time in the NBA playoffs in Oklahoma City. You're an NBA guy and an NBA historian. Where would you put this Oklahoma City defense in terms of, you know, historical context?
Yeah, so they belong in the conversation with the all-time greats. Lots of folks are pointing back to the Detroit Pistons from the early 2000s, those bad boy teams. The most impressive thing is Oklahoma City with a formula to defend modern basketball, right? With the rise of the three-pointer, with the rise an emphasis on perimeter play, the ability of teams to score from three, the Thunder having a game plan that chokes off the paint so that, you know, there is no penetration and kick, and their ability. They have 7 or 8 guys, 4 or 5 of whom I would characterize as elite defenders. Their ability to get out to the perimeter and shut down the three, that's the thing that really distinguishes them, in my opinion.
Really good point there, because, you know, obviously, the late 80s, early 90s bad boys teams, even the Bulls teams with Pippen and Jordan and Grant, etc., defensively, didn't have to worry about closing out on three-point shooters. And to watch them do two things, guard 1 through 5, switch every single 1 through 5 screen with up to, like, any combination of 9 or 10 players on the floor is amazing. And then to watch them, like you said, almost smother, strangle, you know, that three-point line at times is so impressive. I think what's really fun to watch from my standpoint, Joe, is on-ball defending is so physical, it's so high motor, and then their long arms at so many different positions and their, you know, hands and the deflections. I just can't remember a team that's more disruptive in today's game. To your point, it's a completely different game, and it's so hard to stop, you know, today's skill level, and yet they're able to do it.
Yeah, and they deliberately built a defensive identity with a type of player that has the attributes that you're describing. It's it's the foot speed. Those guys can get in front of traditional penetrators. The acquisitions that they made in this offseason with Alex Caruso and Isaiah Hartenstein really addressed the two sort of weaknesses in their defensive scheme. Caruso is as good an on-ball defender as anybody in the league, so that was just sort of adding to their perimeter pressure. But Hartenstein's ability to clean up the glass, that was what they were missing. They had Chet Holmgren last season, and they got knocked out in the playoffs, and it was ultimately, widely regarded as a lack of size. Well, they addressed that size issue with Hartenstein on the rebounding, and they added to their perimeter pressure. They have this luxury. You know, they got rid of Josh Giddey, who's a very good player, who's going to have, I think, a great career in Chicago. But because of the depth they have and the built, you know, they have all of these guys, this Kayson Wallace, Jalen Williams, honestly, both Jalen Williams, Aaron Wiggins, they just have a lot of dogs, a lot of guys that are capable of getting into it physically, and their foot speed is excellent, and the on-ball defense is unparalleled.
You know, it's also interesting as we talk about Oklahoma City defensively, and I had a conversation with a friend about this the other day, is that for those that just kind of pay attention now to the NBA and they're like, what are you guys talking about? You know, they still gave up 111. You know, they gave up, over 100. They're not holding people to 75 or 85. It just speaks to, it's impossible to really completely shut down today's players, right?
For sure. And that's a function of pace. I mean, part of the strategy for these high-level teams, it's not a mistake that both the Pacers and the Thunder are two of the top three teams in terms of offensive pace in the entire NBA. And here they are facing each other in the NBA Finals. An element of that is the efficiency with which they play on the offensive end. They tend to take higher percentage shots. They have higher percentage makes, and it's a part of their game plan to get out in transition and get easier baskets. And so, holding the Pacers to 111 in the first game, it was 1 point not enough, but it took an aberrational three-point shooting performance by the Pacers to get there.
You know, it's also interesting because I've fallen in love with this Oklahoma City team, and I personally think that you really don't know until you see these teams in the postseason, because there's such a difference between regular season NBA and postseason NBA. But man, Joe, you know this. Denver had them dead to right in game four with a chance to go up 3-1. They had game five on their racket there with a chance to go up 3-2. I think looking back in terms of what they did to Minnesota, and I think what they're on the verge of doing to Indiana, it just speaks to just how great Jokic is.
That's such a great point. And really, if he had gotten just the tiniest bit more help.
Right.
And I'm not, this is not like scapegoating or placing blame. If Jamal Murray had played just the tiniest bit better, if Aaron Gordon hadn't gotten hurt, the hamstring did compromise him at the end. They were right there. That's a championship pedigree team with, in my humble estimation, the very best player in the world in Jokic. And that's what it takes to go up against a defense like Oklahoma City. And part of the thing that you tip your hat to for the Thunder is, you have to earn your way into a finals. The NBA is the purest kind of meritocracy, in my opinion, where you have to, teams don't just come out of nowhere and find themselves in the finals. You have to go through these rounds of losing. You have to get build up some scar tissue. And that 7-game series against Denver proved to us the championship pedigree of the Thunder, in the way I look at it.
Yeah, and you didn't even mention Porter Jr. not being healthy during that series as well.
Right.
That could have been a difference maker. You know, in mentioning sort of earning your way, one of the reasons I was skeptical before the postseason started, although I quickly came around, is just we understand that the NBA is this build towards a championship. It's winning a series 1 year, winning two series the next year, getting to the finals and losing in the third year, and then finally winning it maybe in the fourth year. But Oklahoma City's, you know, trek towards, I think, what will be their first title, they kind of cut some of those steps out. Why have they been able to do that?
More than any other reason, I think the offseason acquisitions. They were able, in the combination of Caruso and Hartenstein, to address in such a meaningful way the two things that were their weaknesses. And, you know, you add those two guys and the contribution that they've been making over these playoffs. I mean, remember, Caruso has a ring. That guy knows how to play. He has the chops. Hartenstein was a crucial link in the Knicks run last year, and then you add in the combination those two guys alongside SGA, who's just elevated, and that's why he won the MVP this year. He's elevated his game. He is unstoppable. He is scoring 36 points a game in these finals, and I don't see any defensive scheme that's going to take him out of that. And he's been a holy terror the entirety of these playoffs. I mean, they were in the semifinals last year, and they were expected to be in the Western Conference Finals. It was an upset by Dallas, to take Oklahoma. I mean, Minnesota to take Oklahoma City out. It was an upset.
All right, let's just talk about how you see the rest of this series going. Indiana was able to, you know, in a very strange, stunning, you know, final few minutes of game one, get one. Do you see them getting another one?
The best way for the Pacers to get another one is to shoot the ball from the three-point line effectively. They shot over 46% in game one, and they shot over 40% of their field goal attempts were from three. So that's the recipe. They have to take threes, and they have to make threes. The other element for the Pacers is getting Haliburton unleashed, because he, by his own standards these playoffs, has had a substandard finals performance. Now, that is by design from Oklahoma City's perspective and point of view. They came in saying, we are going to take your best player out of what he wants to do. They've limited his touches. They've limited his penetration. He can't get to the lane. So this is the chess match element of it that I'm so excited to see tonight. Saw a tiny bit of it. You know, Rick Carlisle does not waste any minutes at all. He's an extraordinary coach. They started running dribble handoff to get Haliburton the ball moving downhill a little bit in the half-court set, and that's how he got 12 points, you know, in what folks would characterize as garbage time. But it's not garbage time from the Pacers' perspective, because they're experimenting and they're trying in real time, in real life, to get him acclimated to what I think will be part of the game plan. So Haliburton needs to be effective offensively. He can come, you know, off the ball. He doesn't have to be the primary ball handler. Nembhard can do that, but they have to knock down their threes. That's their only hope, because Oklahoma City is so effective defensively at getting the ball and getting out in transition. They get all their points that way.
I totally agree with that. And look, some of those are going to be contested, and they're going to have to knock him down. It's interesting that you mentioned, you know, getting him in a spot where he's getting downhill. I thought in game two, the ball screen set for SGA in the middle of the floor where he likes it was set even closer to kind of the half court line. And once he either split it or went around the switch or the hedge, he was downhill with a lot more space than he had had in game one. You know, he had 38 in game one, Joe, and I had Legler on the podcast on Friday, and I asked him how he thought he played, and Legler said, I thought he played pretty well. And I said, I thought it was like one of those SGA games that could have been a lot better, but I thought he was great in game two. What did you think?
I totally agree with your assessment, Kevin. I didn't like SGA's game one. He
Me
had
neither.
38 points on 30 attempts. That's not the recipe for Oklahoma City. He needs to be distributing the ball. He had 3 assists in game 1, and the Thunder had 13 assists in the whole game, which is crazy. In game 2, he had a more like sort of normal super duper star SGA game, which was he distributed the ball great. He had 8 assists. He had some rebounds, and his scoring came within the context of the offense. I mean, the one vulnerability, and we saw this in the latter half of the fourth quarter of game 1, the Thunder gets stuck sometimes in half court offense.
They do.
And if Jalen Williams is not knocking down buckets, you know, he shot 30% from the field in game 1. If he's not knocking down perimeter buckets, they can be defended. And, you know, their offense is really dependent on getting rebounds and getting out and running, or getting steals and getting out and running. If the Pacers make shots, like, look, here's why the Pacers won game 1. They shot 6-for-10 from 3-point land in the fourth quarter, and the Thunder had 0 3-pointers in the fourth quarter. And that was, you know, ultimately the difference. That's how the Pacers came back from being down 15. But that's the recipe, is get the Thunder into a half court offense. Now the remedy for that is SGA in the context of that offense penetrating and getting his little 12-foot floaters, or getting his very comfortable pull-ups from the free throw line and knocking those down. That's how they can stave that off. And they also can get some easy buckets by having both bigs on the floor at the end of the game, unlike what they did in game 1.
Yeah, in addition, in game 1, to them making all those threes, you know, Oklahoma City didn't turn their what I think was one of the greatest halves of defense I've ever watched in an NBA playoff game, what they did in the first half, forcing 19 turnovers. You know, by the way, those weren't careless Indiana turnovers. Oklahoma City took the ball away from them 11 times with steals, but they couldn't turn it into a lot of points, in part because the turnovers were happening closer to the rim than they were on the perimeter.
Right.
But yeah, it's funny that you said that, because I think Indiana runs much better half-court offense against a set defense than Oklahoma City does. I think there are too many, I don't want to call them pure ISO possessions, but too many one and two touch and quick shot possessions on offense. So where are you on Haliburton in the whole conversation of kind of what is he? A really good player, a great player, a star, or a superstar?
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
I'm fine with star. We need him to be consistent over the entire course of an entire season to nudge himself into that superstar territory.
Yeah.
But with all of the made baskets at end of games, it's not a fluke. It's not an accident. A guy like that has an attribute, you know, that is unmatched in the league. You know, it's really the guy who won the clutch scoring award, you know, the clutch player of the year, was Jalen Brunson in the regular season. And SGA is now demonstrated, I mean, not SGA, I'm sorry, Haliburton has demonstrated himself to have that clutch gene in a way when the stakes are the very, 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 very highest. And it's amazing to watch. And he's very under control, and he's not scared by the moment. So, I mean, you have to give him, you know, he's certainly put himself right in the mix for top 15 player in the league.
One other quick thing on the NBA Finals. I mentioned something the other day. Scott had Halliburton on after Game 1, then he had SGA on after Game 2, had Aaron Wiggins, you know, Terp, on after Game 2 as well. And I said this, I think, yesterday, or maybe it was Monday. Oklahoma City's players are so mature given how young they are. That's my perception from outside looking in. Is this something you've noticed or observed or even talked about?
Haven't really talked about it, but your observation is on the money, and I think it's part of the institutional continuity in Oklahoma City that they have sort of an expectation. You don't see a lot of drama around Oklahoma City, right? You don't see, you know, players acting out. You don't see situations where the players are challenging the head coach. You don't hear about drama between the front office and the coaching staff. None of those things that, you know, have affected so many other franchises. You don't ever hear any of that. The entire franchise seems to be on the same page. It definitely starts with the GM, Sam Presti, who I think is a tone setter and has created the expectation. And I think the guys all arrive and they believe. I also think that they do some, you know, they're looking for a type of guy, a specific type of personality, a specific type of, like, psychological disposition. Because it is apparent that Oklahoma City, all those guys buy in, and all those guys like each other, and that's the infectious, you know, they're legendary for their after the game, whichever player is being interviewed on the court, you know, the rest of the team is up to some kind of shenanigans. It just shows, like the support they all have for each other.
All right, we're talking to Joe House from The Ringer, at House from D.C. Joe lives here. He's a big D.C. sports fan. In addition to being a great podcast host, you can listen to his Ringer gambling show, East Coast Bias, wherever you get a podcast. Fairway Rolling, the same thing. So, you know, I want to get to golf, but one more on OKC. I think I felt this way 2 years ago about Denver and, you know, lack of depth, injuries, the whole thing. But given how young they are, given how many draft choices they have moving forward, are we about to see a big run from a franchise in the NBA where we're, you know, we're in this 7-year run of a different champion every year? What do you think about, because I think OKC is going to win this. Maybe Indiana gets one more. It sounds like you feel the same way. But what are we watching the beginning of? Something dynastic, special, or not?
Yeah, so I agree with you that it's going to be 4-2 in this series. And I have used that word, Kevin. I think this is sustainable. I think dynastic applies. And there's two reasons for it. In the first place, their rise has occurred simultaneous with the transition in the league. So all of the superstars in the league are on their, you know, about to be taking their retirement laps. We're going to see LeBron on a retirement lap here before we know it. Steph Curry in the same mode. Kevin Durant in the same mode. James Harden's not that far away. So all of these greats from the past decade to 15 to 20 years, in the case of LeBron, are moving on, and that has an impact on the franchises that those guys are associated with. So the teams that are on the rise are teams like the Pacers and the Knicks and the Timberwolves, and, you know, we'll see you know, what develops with Houston, but those are all younger teams. The Knicks are kind of their own unique animal. But with the other teams, they're all younger. They're all built around this proposition of depth on the wing. And the important thing about them being young is that they're on contracts that are affordable inside of the new salary cap structure, this one apron, two apron, all that kind of nonsense. So Oklahoma City has been very deliberate in building that way. They have guys that are in a similar position contract-wise, and each year somebody on their team is probably going to have to move on because the Thunder won't pay them. Like, right. Lu Dort might not be on the team next year, but it kind of doesn't matter. because they can reload in just the manner we saw with the last offseason. They were able to acquire Hartenstein with room in under their salary cap, and they were able to acquire Caruso in a trade where they moved on from Josh Giddey, who was a luxury for them. I think that sort of model is repeatable for them, and it makes them sustainable, and it makes them scary. Because I do think that this might be an era where they get three out of the next four out of the next five, because that's how they're built.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. All right, let's switch topics, because I saw you put this up or you reposted it. Rory McIlroy at Oakmont this weekend, making the cut, he's minus 350, missing the cut, plus 235. Which is the bet you would make if you had to make a bet?
Oh, 100% missed the cut. He is, in my humble opinion, still feeling the after effects, the hangover of winning the Masters and what that, you know, meant to him, what it meant to his life, what it meant to his career. He has not yet rediscovered the competitive fire that had him as, I think, kind of the unquestionable leader of the professional golf world through the first quarter of the season. From January all the way through the Masters, Rory was the best player in the world. It wasn't Scottie Scheffler. And, you know, he was absolutely firing on all cylinders. A bunch of stuff that's explainable happened after, right? There was a natural sort of letdown that comes from winning the Masters. He had, you know, an increase in everybody's interest, the entire sporting world's interest across the globe wanted a piece of Rory McIlroy because of how dramatic his Masters win was. And that Masters caught, you know, so many eyeballs across the globe. All casual sports fans were intrigued by it. And so Rory went on that sort of tour, you know, celebrating the win. And, you know, there's stuff going on in his life in addition to, you know, the fact that the driver that he used to win the Masters is not available to him to use in competitive golf any further. So he didn't have a great performance at the PGA Championship. He just missed the cut at the Canadian Open, and this is not a golf course where you rediscover your fire, where you find something. The Oakmont is not that place.
All right, let's finish up with this, because the golf course is the story heading into this U.S. Open. So what's the winning score, and then give me the winner, and just give me somebody from, you know, the back of the pack. You know, I'll say plus 3,000 or greater that you like.
Okay. So Bryson DeChambeau is going to win this U.S. Open. He is going to defend his Open title from Pinehurst. This place sets up very well for him in the way that Wingfoot set up very well for him. Another notorious Northeast, you know, golf course where the rough is ferocious and fairways are narrow. And Bryson was able to get around that place, Wingfoot, with a combination of power off the tee and power from the rough. Oakmont is harder than Wingfoot. So the winning score, I believe, is going to be 3 under. And that's only because of the amount of water that golf course has taken on this past month and in this week including. And it's going to have the effect of balls that might have bounced hard in the fairway and bounded into the rough are going to stay in the fairway. It's not going to matter for the greens. The greens are hard, and they're going to be, you know, dry enough. They won't be target shooting, and you can't do that at Oakmont. But the functional behavior of the fairways will be somewhat gentler because balls that otherwise might have bounced in the rough are going to stay in the fairway. So that's the analysis for why I think the score will be under par. But I think Bryson, it just suits him so well. I understand the absurdity of, you know, fading Scottie Scheffler, who is, you know, reminded us why he's the number one player in the world with 3 wins out of his last 4 events, but I just think the U.S. Open suits Bryson so well. So that's my pick for winner. And then a guy down the card that I like is a quiet guy by nature, but he has a win on a big boy golf course, and he has a great track record on big boy golf courses, and that's Harris English. who
Steve Sands gave him out too. Yeah.
Oh no! I didn't even list. I didn't know. Yeah. Son of a gun! I thought I was being clever here.
He gave me Fleetwood. He gave me Fleetwood in English. After the favorites.
Well, Fleetwood is, you know, a known name. I thought I was being so smart. How about this? Denny McCarthy, I think, has a great chance of success at Oakmont because there is precedent for guys that don't hit the ball 350 yards but are able to keep it in the fairway. And the incredible putting prowess of Denny. I want guys that are comfortable from 8 feet to save par. And that's Denny. You know, Denny has an amazing track record on the most difficult golf courses on tour. So, like, Denny to finish in the top 20, I have a little action on that, and he's our hometown hero. So let's go.
We'd love to see that, and he can putt. Thanks for doing this. Hope you're well. I'll see you soon.
Thanks, Kevin. Can't wait for us to tee it up again. You get healthy again, buddy.
We're good. We're good. We'll do it soon. Thanks, right. Joe. Appreciate
love
it, as
to
always.
Hear it.
Joe
love
House.
To hear it.
Everybody from the Ringer, he's great in talking hoops, golf, and we'll do some football. We'll probably have him back on before the NBA draft. We'll do that. There's some news from out in Ashburn about a player that has just signed a contract. More on that next.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Green from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.